Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to New Books in Psychology, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. I'm Susan Greylock-Yusum, the host of this channel, and today we'll be speaking with Dr. Marisol D'Andrea about her new book, The Power of Artistic Thinking, Think Like an Artist and Innovate. Marisol is a visual artist, an illustrator, an author, and a multidisciplinary researcher. She holds a doctoral degree in leadership, higher and adult education from the University of Toronto. And she currently resides in Canada. Marisol, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Susan. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
I wonder if you can begin by telling us a little bit about yourself, about your research and your interests.
Right. I've been a visual artist for a long time, perhaps 30 years. I wanted to be a cartoonist, but you know, one of those things that when you're a little and you tell your parents and they say the arts don't pay, so you have to think about a different career. So I put that behind me for a while. But once I worked at the University of Toronto for about, I was in 5-10 years, I met many interesting people, including artists. And then I met this academic professor who inspired me to delve myself into the arts. And I don't know if you know Richard Florida, and he's one of my biggest inspirations because I worked for him for about 4 years. And he encouraged me to conduct research in the arts. So that's, I set out to do that. I started by exploring what is a starving artist? What does it mean? Is there a starving artist? So I began with that question, and that got me into the PhD program. during the process of the program, I needed to find my own research question, a new research question, because a PhD entails, like as many of you know, we need to answer new questions. Find the questions and answer them in an academic and profound way. Therefore, I set out to study the decision-making process of arts funding in Canada. And that was a very sensitive topic for many of my participants, and in particular the councils, because they didn't feel comfortable answering to those questions. But through the adventure, I got to talk to many artists, to many of them, about 50. And not just artists, but also leaders. And most of these leaders had an artistic background. And I started to realize, connecting the dots, that's one of the chapters of the book, and I realized that I think they had something, there were some similarities. So I started to take note. I always wanted to write, and I'm a big arts advocate as an artist myself. And so I started making notes and everything came into place. And that's how this book came to life, basically. It's just from the inspiration from talking to artists based from my past dissertation. Yeah.
And you describe yourself as a social artist. What does that mean?
I'm interested in justice, social justice. I'm interested in freedom. I'm interested in freedom of thought. I feel like people we're not taught to think freely as children. And that's have been one of my major concerns because I feel like they feed you, right? The school, the education system, they want you to think in a particular way or to do things that because it's good for the economy. But they forget about what our passions are, what we really like to do. Nobody asks us, you know, this, because I remember, let me skip a little bit back when I did high school here, when I came to this country, to Canada, I had to do high school all over again in order to get into university. And I wanted to be an engineer. I was very creative and I was very good at math. And the teacher told me that there was no jobs in engineering at that time. So, you know, and that stuck with me for a long time. And me mentoring in my career path, I always encourage people to follow their passions because there is no other way, right? So that's how I feel about education, and that's the kind of artist I am. And I try to express myself with the issues that affect me. I started painting, for example, one of my major artworks was exhibited in the gallery at the University of Toronto. It was called Bellissima. It was women doing housework. And how they navigate the whole, and, you know, leaving your career, because I stay home. I was a stay-home mom for 4 years. So that's the kind of artist I like to share, you know, being open-minded, address social justice, fairness, equality of work, housework. Why does the women does, my question is why women does more for the whole housework? How are we going to change that? So I express that through my paintings. And so that's why I call myself a social artist. I'm interested in human beings, how they behave, and justice, social justice behind all of that.
So what inspired you to write The Power of Artistic Thinking?
I wanted to share with the world, whoever is interested, to share my concerns that I had throughout my lifetime. I'm not just an artist in the daily life, because I met many people who felt stuck in their jobs, in their life, and they didn't do anything about it, and they didn't know how to go about it. So this book is to open your eyes, to think about the new possibilities. It's not me telling you what to do. It's me just sharing what I've been through and how did I navigate it? Because we all face obstacles, negativity, uncertainty. And I think this would help me navigate through all that negativity. And I just wanted to share it, what I learned. And what I found the most powerful part of this book is about the philosophy, and we can talk about that later, but about, you know, self-transforming. How do we transform? How do we make a better, it's not just about, you know, it's about ourselves. How do we improve? How do we become a better human beings? Are we happy? It's not about a happiness book, but it's about appreciating the arts to lead us to change and innovation.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting when you mentioned you were having a difficult period and you actually had a dream about the name of the book.
Oh, yeah, Roberta, thank you. Yes, I had a dream because I was struggling with my academic career. So I left my job and at the university because I wanted to explore new things. And I felt that I was in an environment that I wasn't allowed to for the most part, right? Especially when you have a job, you know, 9 to 5 and you are tired and you gotta come home and do housework and take care of all the other things, right? At home, it's double to a job. And so I didn't have time really to pursue my passion. So although I kept painting, it wasn't enough for me. I needed to write. So yes, I was thinking about what do I write about? So I read and read and read and, you know, and looked through my transcripts from my previous interviews with the artists and reflect. And all of a sudden, one day I just woke up and I connected all the dots. And I was, yeah, it's the power of artistic thinking. And my family tells me that I'm always thinking because that's what artists do, right? So that's how it came about.
In the book, you break artistic thinking down into these six very distinct aspects. So I'd love to walk through them, and then you can describe them, and then it'd be great if you want to share any tips like you do in the book for listeners on how they can engage with those.
Yeah.
But maybe first, what is artistic thinking?
So artistic thinking is a term that I define. It's not design thinking. Design thinking is more about ideation, creating a product. Artistic thinking is about yourself creating a new you, or yourself creating something new. So for me, artistic thinking is a process. It's a combination of things that begins with passion, right? Then develops into imagination, then observation, visualization, and then you've got to put action into all those things. It's not just about daydreaming or thinking about it, but you got to put some action and try to innovate. Not just innovate something, but innovate yourself and make a change. And that's what I call end the chapter with a self-transform chapter.
Yeah, that's a good distinction. That's not design thinking. People might get those confused. Design thinking is more of a more process-oriented, and this is more of a approach.
Approach, exactly. Thank you.
Well, I think one of the things it seems like, and this is maybe what you mentioned earlier that inspired you, myths that we have in our cultures about artists, mm-hmm. and that maybe artists are born being able to think a certain way and some of mm-hmm. us aren't. And I think you make that case in the book that, you know, we're all born with certain capabilities. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Can you say more about that?
I believe we are born like as artists. We are human beings, intelligent human beings. It's just the school system that tells us not to be creative. They teach us as a kids. I mean, I remember I did research on my own children when they were little, and they were super creative, and I made sure my duty was to ensure that they kept that creativity with them, that they didn't lose that. And until now, I push it because the system, I don't know if you're familiar with Sir Ken Robinson, he fought for that, and he's also quoted in my book, and the education system have a way to, you know, I think mainly in high school years, to close those doors. And even the whole government, the whole society, because the arts don't make money and it's all based on an economic agenda. So I decided to enroll my daughters into an art school for high school, and they have thrived. And that doesn't mean they want to be artists. One is pursuing science, the other one just wants to be a record producer, but you know, they think differently. They are like different human beings. They take criticism very well. They are open-minded. They listen. And I have seen that from students. So, yeah. So, and I don't think our society values those skills because, again, right, everything is economics. And that's another case that I'm trying to make in this book. Well, you know, the government doesn't want to pay for it, but there is something that we can do for ourselves, right?
No, that's true in the U.S. That's true in Canada, too. There's not
Yes, it's all over the world, right? All over the world, right? And then the arts are not respected because when I was painting a lot, all my family wanted a free piece of art. Everybody wants me to fill their walls with free art, right? It takes me a long time to do. So it's something that we need to change, right? But I know it's going to take time, but it starts with one. But I strongly believe it starts with ourselves, with oneself. We cannot change others, we can change ourselves, no matter what, if we want to.
Do you have any suggestions for parents who might not be able to enroll their kids in an art school, how they can help cultivate that when they're raising their children?
Yes. Take them to museums. Take them to art festivals. I used to drag my kids to the festivals. They used to complain and they used to cry. But now they are teenagers and they thank me. They thank me because they have developed that. Right? It's the same as doing math. I think art is a necessity. Because this world is so exciting, when I look around it and look at the government, what they do, you know, how they make decisions, everything is so linear, right? And everything is mainly for their own pursuit of economics agendas, rather than society, fulfillment, happiness, enjoyment, right? They want, for example, if they give you money for an arts program, they want you to prove that people are interested. But how could you do that when you haven't given society from the early age, right? You haven't given the arts to them. How would they, right? So it's that dichotomy. I also teach children. I used to teach before the pandemic. I used to teach Spanish to children. JK to grade 8. And I made my own duty to just teach them about the arts and teach them and just merge language and the arts, which was fascinating. I worked really well and I'm so proud of that. So it's us as an individual that can make a change on small little steps, I think, right, into the love for art. But yes, take your children to museums, take them, and even if they don't agree with you, they will eventually. They will, if you are not exposed to something, you don't understand it, right? But once you are, there is so many things in the museum you can enjoy. There is something to enjoy for everyone, for example.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense about exposure. It's also interesting you mentioned that the exposure to art and artistic thinking has helped your children to be more open to criticism and more like comfortable getting feedback.
Right. They are. And we have a wonderful relationship. They're teenagers, of course. They don't agree with everything you say, but they listen. They are very good listeners. They understand. They thrive in the arts, although they study music. I have them engaged in music as well. I'm not a musician, unfortunately, but I have them enroll when they were little into music. So they're good artists, but I'm much older than them, so whenever I had a problem, I seek their feedback because they have so many wonderful ideas. And things that we have been constrained to develop. So I'm going to rely on them. And it's fantastic. It is fantastic because I think it starts again with the parents developing again the next generation of thinkers, right? So it's up to us, really.
Well, one of the aspects of artistic thinking you call out is passion and obsession.
Right.
And I'd love, and it's one interesting thing you do in the book is you pair up the different ideas. So passion and obsession is the first one you get into. And I'd love to hear your thoughts around that. Especially there was a story you tell about the New Yorker artist that I thought was really interesting as an example of the power of passion and dedication.
The cartoonist New Yorker that submitted his drawings like 2,000 times. So that's part of being obsessive. A good obsession, I discuss about passion. I know that we are all passionate about something. So we all know what passion is, right? So what's your desire? What do you want the most in your heart? What makes you happy? But then you gotta put some action into your passion if that's what you want. And what I discuss in the book is there are two kinds of obsessions. One is the harmonious passion. And then another one is the excessive to the stream, and you don't want, you have to be careful with that. It's good to be excessive in terms of achieving your goals and using your time wisely and not hurting anybody, of course. But for example, let me give you an example. When I was a man, I was working. I went to work 9 to 5. I had extra work that I would bring from work, which I will do in the weekends. I have to do the housekeeping in the house. So I will excessively paint at nighttime. So I will have very little sleep. I will stay awake until 4, 3 a.m., 3, 4 a.m., just to work, because that's something that I really needed to do. That's something that I really wanted to accomplish. I know it wasn't going to be forever, but I can tell you that I can still do that because I am passionate about it. And that's the difference that I mean when you're successive, right? To the level that you find the time to do it. When I talk to people and they say, well, I don't have the time. How do you have the time to do it? I want to do this. You will find the time. No matter what, you will find the time to do it. So that's what I mean by obsessive passion, that obsession in the book. Mm-hmm. Right? Finding that way. There is always a way.
Tapping into your passion is the way. When the energy follows.
Exactly. Exactly.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
The next section you talk about is imagine and believe. I'd love to hear you talk a little more about that, especially why those two are connected, imagining and believing.
Right. I am a big Disney fan. Because of the story when our kids were small, that was our holiday vacation. I learned about Walter Elias Disney, his story. And the vivid example that I have is that how did he imagine all these cartoons? And how did he believe in it? How did he believe in Mickey Mouse? Why did he believe, nobody? He got a lot of rejection. And how was he able? How was he able to create something and make it believable? Imagine it, create it, and believe, and for people to believe it. He just did it, right? So he believed in it. It's about believing in what you imagine. So sometimes we don't know we are constrained for our thoughts, our own actions, our own lives, busy life. So we need to take some time to reflect and imagine things and imagine impossibilities. I just make it come to life, right? And believe it. Believe in it, because if you don't believe it, you just will forget that imagination and will be. So it's just sort of, I connect it to, in one word, I would say it's a reflection. It's a reflection process of what you imagine to be.
That makes sense, because beyond, if imagining something is one part, but you have to believe it in order to hold that imagination through naysayers, right, or people not, saying it doesn't make any sense or it's never going to happen. You have to just believe in it.
A current example, Elon Musk. Elon Musk, he's a contemporary example of this book. At that time, I didn't read about him, but now I would love to incorporate him. Look at him. He's imagining us living in Mars. and he's going to do it, right? So that's a vivid example of what I'm trying to accomplish in this book.
Well, then, so that makes total sense. Imagine and believe. And then and then you talk about observe and connect. I think that was really interesting, especially when you, say more about observing and connecting as part of artistic thinking.
Yeah. Leonardo da Vinci, I love that example. He used to throw a sponge filled with paint on the wall, and he used to imagine figures, imagine his work, connect the dots. So he will observe. And I think all artists, we are very keen observers. We think different, not different, I wouldn't say. Yeah, we are all different. We all think different. But it's a mastery of connecting by observing. So it's not just, even when you go shopping, it's not just looking at the price, let's say. Let me put it just in plain terms. It's not just looking at the price, oh, it's a pretty outfit. But what is that pretty outfit comes from? I always ask myself, where does it come from? Who made it? And is it worth it, right? If I could afford it, like I still questioning. Then you observe all around you. Another example I think more related is I wrote most of my book in a coffee shop. And I started to observe people around me, how they behave, what they did, not just indoors, but outdoors. And I incorporated that in my book because I found it fascinating. I saw this lady on a bike arguing with, I don't know, with a man, perhaps her husband, she had a baby or not. And it distressed me that they had the baby on the stroller and they were smoking in front of the baby. Why is that important? Oh, it made me think about, is that allowed? Should there be policies that protect children from parents that smoke in front of them? Things like that, right? So different scenarios. And that's what I mean by observation. It's observation, questioning, connecting, right? It depends on the moment where you are or what you are trying to accomplish. In my case, was writing stories. So with that sense, I observe, or with that aim.
So if someone was going to try to cultivate those qualities in themselves to become more of an artistic thinker, mm-hmm. that's the kind of an exercise you could do, actually.
Exactly. Yes, observe. And yes, thank you. Yes, exactly. Observe and question it. And, you know, probably put it into different pieces and try to connect it. And why is it matter at the end? And maybe because all those reflections, all those thinking patterns, all those connections, it helps you. It helps your mind. It helps your brains. You exercise them, right? And you never know. You might have your next book or your next product along the line, right? Because that's what every innovator have done in the past, right?
Is that similar to the way that Montessori school is taught? Is that part of the methodology in Montessori?
Exactly. That's what they use. That's the approach that they have become famous for, right?
What about visualize and ponder?
Visualize, okay, observation is a way of seeing the world, and visualizing is the act of forming images, right? So how do you form image? You have to reflect. And as a painter, that's my process. I visualize it. It doesn't come out the way that I have it visualized, but it's a starting point. The outcome doesn't have to be the same. So but it requires a lot of reflection and pondering to visualize the outcome. One great example that I love is when I watch the movie about Pelé, the soccer player. and his father, they were so poor to buy a soccer ball. And his father would make him train with mangoes, the fruit mangoes. And it was amazing because in his mind, he would have to visualize that it was a soccer ball. And that's how he was trained as a child. That's how he was trained soccer, actually. Which I found that amazing. And that's what I mean by visualization. Also in athletics, I met this swimmer who visualizes winning. He visualizes that he's already at the end of the pool before beginning the race. And that's what I mean by visualization. And it's very helpful to visualize the outcome as well, not just for me. It depends, right? Depends of your where you are and what you're trying to accomplish.
In the book, you talked about what happens in the brain during visualization. And I'm curious if you have anything to say about that, like the brain of an artist and what happens during the artistic thinking process inside of the brain.
I won't go into detail scientifically because there's a lot of literature on that. But basically, the message that I'm trying to convey is that there are places in our brain that need to be exercised and practiced, and they become stagnant when we don't use it. And that's part of the artistic thinking that most of us forget because we live in a routine. Most of us live in a routine world that we do the same thing every day. And most often we don't want to break that routine. So I don't think our brains are utilized fully, because we are capable of doing more than just that. So that's the main message
that I'm trying to people. Sometimes people say, I'm just not a visual thinker. I just don't see it that way. What would you say to someone like that to help them overcome that or try to cultivate that part of themselves?
I would say, have you tried? Have you tried doing it? Try, because people are, the idea of artistic thinking is that the individual, we need to have that impulse a little bit to try, because nobody can force it on you, right? And you need to try, be open to experience, as that's part of being also an artist, to be open to experience and try new things. I've been told a lot that I try so many things, and I do, because I'm always thinking about what am I going to do next? What is next? What am I going to learn next? What I want to share next? So I'm always thinking, but I know for a fact that some people don't, and they don't want to think, right? But they don't realize that by doing so, we are letting others to think for us instead of thinking for ourselves. So it's important to try. I mean, if you're happy where you are, kudos to you, but if not, think a little bit and try it, right? It won't hurt. On the contrary.
That's a very good point, actually, about if you don't do it yourself, it will happen to you.
Yeah. Right.
Well, the fifth point that you make about artistic thinking is cultivating the ability to learn and explore. And I think this is really interesting. You talked a little bit about how children have this capability, and I'd love to hear you say more about learning and exploring and how we can cultivate that ourselves.
Right.
As adults.
It's about keeping your education going. You don't have to go to a formal school, but keep learning. Keep learning, keep reading. I come from an educational school background. My PhD is in education. So I'm motivated to learn. It is important. That's something that the school system sometimes fails to teach children. I feel sometimes that we prepare society to be a soldier rather than thinkers and innovators, right? And we don't we just give them what they need, but we don't open the book, we don't open further and say there's more to it. The world is not just this. There's more, and just read, read. And everything, every experience I had, every question I had, I found the answer by reading books. Because there is always someone that knows more than you and have done the work and have done the research. We cannot know everything, and we can learn every day from someone. So be open to learning. That's the first step, right?
That makes me think about visiting museums too, because you make the point that you don't actually have to practice art. You can also just engage with art by going to galleries and museums.
Exactly, exactly. And doesn't take much. It's just a little bit of time. But it is important. It's rewarding for the future of everyone, right?
Well, the last part that you bring up about artistic thinking in the book is practice and repeat. And I think that was really interesting because it actually made me think about this myth that we seem to have that artists are just born in this creative and they don't actually have to work at their art or their practice. And yeah. I think you make that point really strongly that practicing is critical.
It's important. Artists work hard, really, really, really hard. I've seen them. They have 2-3 jobs. I do have so many jobs. You need to practice if you want to be better at what you do. There's no other way around it. There's no lack one way. It's just practice. And I've seen that because my daughters play music, and I've seen them constantly practice and practice, and it's a never-ending, right? It never finishes. I mean, the more you practice, the better you are. Right. So it's a constant, it's for everything. It's for everything, not just for reading a book, for learning music, for learning art, making a meal, cooking, dancing, playing a sport, you know, speaking. It's practice, it's the key.
I think that's challenging in our culture. I think we have a very impatient culture.
Right. That we want things fast, and now with social media, everything is our fingertips. But think about it. We are so great at social media now because we've been practicing.
The 10,000-hour rule. We put in our 10,000 hours on
10,000 hours, right? Yes. Malcolm there. And the 10,000, yeah. It takes discipline as well, and that's hard to follow. But that's why it's important to connect everything, to connect the passion, because if you don't have the passion to do something, it's really hard to practice something that you are not engaged with. So you need to be engaged.
You present the book, it's fairly linearly, but really the point I think you've been making is they're all just interconnected all the time. The passion, imagining, observing, practicing, learning,
right,
visualizing.
Right. And the results are innovation, perhaps. Self-transformation, for sure. And that's my main message.
Right. So the benefit of cultivating artistic thinking is actually transformation.
Right. Right. And on an individual level in particular. Yeah.
And also, I think you said something I thought was really lovely, that expanding our, enlarging our view of the world. I thought that was a really interesting way to think about the shift that actually could happen when you're transforming the way you think and approach, that you're actually expanding your sense of the world.
Right, right. It is important. It is important because we live in a complex world. So how do we do that? You know, we cannot have, do you want people really to constantly make decisions for your actions, or do you want to take, you don't, you know, think about your own actions and responsibilities and goals and just make it happen. So that's the core of the book. So I just try it. Try it. And I mean, artists are, well, I'm an artist, a little bit biased, but I interview so many. And again, they are really, really hardworking people. They don't get paid much. You know, they are always on the line. And but nothing stops them from keeping their passions alive. Nothing has stopped me of no painting, of no writing. I keep doing it, and I will keep doing it. Thanks.
And I think that connects to failure, because you mentioned that as well. Embracing failure is, you know, a part of the process.
And exactly. It's failure, or I would say it's more mistakes we all make, but it's not a failure. It's just a learning process, right? It's part of learning, part of growing up and learning. And so how do we fix those mistakes? We got to think about it. And we're going to connect the dots, and we're going to visualize it, and we're going to go through the process if we are stuck and try to learn from them, right? So I believe all the chapters of the book, like you have mentioned greatly, connect. All they connect into this wonderful artistic thinking thought and how you can self-transform just by thinking about it.
I think that's a really great reminder, especially in our culture when you're talking about failure. I don't think, especially kids today, I'm not sure we set them up very well to understand that making mistakes is just part of the process,
right?
And that it's okay, and that's a good thing. It's just part of your transformational process is making mistakes.
It is, right? But but the artistic process gives you different possibilities of resolutions, different ways of solving your problem. It's not just one linear answer to questions.
Was there one? Was there an artist you interviewed that a story that sticks out in your mind of their own story of transformation?
Many artists, but I like to discuss about my favorite professor, and he was one of my. He's a supervisor for my PhD, and he taught me so much about art. He's a philosophy of art professor, Mark Kingwell. And he taught me so much about the power of the arts. And he's the one who taught me about Nietzsche, Friedrich Nietzsche, and how the arts are so powerful that even at that time, he will advocate for the arts. And he's the one who says, live your life as a work of art. Right? So, yes, there are many philosophers, but this is the philosophy professor that I learned the most. And art is a gift. And this book for me also is a gift. It's a gift sharing with everyone, artists or not, of how artists really think, because this is the pattern. And even if they don't consider themselves artists, so many innovators, because I work at the university with so many professors, and the most creative of them had an artistic background. And that's how they became successful.
Live your life like a work of art.
Live your life like a work of art.
Well, I know we've taken a lot of your time. That would be a nice place to end on, but I have one other question for you. I would love to know what are you working on now, or what are you thinking about?
Now I'm working, and I received a grant from the Indiana University, and I'm working on diversity issues and leadership. I'm working on that. And also on the side, I'm working on a book, and my next book is going to be about diversity and social justice in the arts.
In the arts?
In the arts, yes.
That's exciting.
Yes. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for the time today. It's great talking to you and hearing about your new book.
Thank you. It was great talking to you, and thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it.